This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. When jazz musician Billy Tipton died in 1989, the news made headlines all over the world. It wasn't his fame as a musician that attracted the attention, but the discovery that Billy Tipton was a woman. Since the age of 19, Tipton, born Dorothy Tipton of Oklahoma City, had lived as a man, had had five common-law wives, and raised several adopted children. Dorothy Tipton first began cross-dressing to get a foot in the male-dominated jazz world during the Depression. As Billy Tipton, she played in jazz bands all over the Midwest and formed the Billy Tipton Trio in the 1950s. Billy Tipton retired from performing at the height of his career, perhaps to avoid the media exposure that might have blown his cover. Diane Middlebrook tells Tipton's story in her new biography, Suits Me. Diane Middlebrook is professor of English at Stanford University. She's also the author of Anne Sexton, a biography. Terry Gross spoke with her last week. Before we hear the interview, let's listen to this 1949 recording that features Billy Tipton.
Well, right now, it's our turn to step over here alongside Billy Tipton, the piano player, and his George Mayer swing trio combination. Billy's going to sing If I Knew Then What I Know Now.
If I knew then what I know now, if I knew then you'd be here now, I'd give the world and its gold to have a new home. The one thing in life worthwhile, if I knew then.
How was it discovered that Billy Tipton really was a woman?
It's a very touching story. Billy was quite ill, had been ill for about 6 weeks before he died. And his son, who was 18 years old, was taking care of him and had been very worried about him. But his father was resisting going to a doctor. And nobody could persuade Billy to do anything he didn't want to do. So one morning, the son fixed breakfast for him, got his father out of bed, taken him to the bathroom, and just observed how sick he was. And while his dad was in the bathroom, he called his mother and told her that he really didn't know what to do. She said, well, call the paramedics and just have him taken to the hospital. So the son did that, as he took his father out of the bathroom to take him to breakfast, his father became unconscious, just slumped against him, and was just dead weight, and he was terribly worried. It laid him on the floor. The paramedics arrived right away, started working over his dad, and opened the pajama tops and exposed to his son's view the fact that, as he put it to me, if my father had lived as a woman, she would have had big breasts. So all of a sudden, Billy was dead. This was a corpse now, and there was the body exposed to the view of the sun and then pretty soon the world.
Did his wives know he was married, or at least lived as if he were married, to several women?
I found five altogether who were called Mrs. Tipton. And in the first relationship with a woman, a very amusing woman named Non Earl, who died in 1967, that was quite clearly a lesbian partnership, although that was not the name it had among the people that knew them. But from about 1940, with the second woman who passed as Mrs. Tipton, or was called Mrs. Tipton, Billy was passing as a man with everybody. This was, of course, one of the fascinating dimensions of the story. I was not able to find that second wife, by the way, whose name is June, but I was able to find the third and fourth wives who explained to me, not only their described or discussed, I should say, their sexual practices, but also shared with me the kind of fascination with how in the world he had gotten away with it. We have a good deal of speculation about this in the book.
Well, what can you pass on to us about what those two former wives told you about how he fooled them?
Well, I don't know how candid I can be, but I will tell you that the best one-liner I got from any wife was for the fourth wife, Mary Ann. She said to me after about the second day of our interviews, when we got to be quite comfortable with each other, she said, "Honey, I can hardly wait to read your book. I thought it was a penis." So we began, she said that she had gotten nurse's training after she and Billy split up, she said she thought she would go try to do a little research herself on what kind of equipment he might have gotten from a medical supply house. I think you have to think of Billy as a kind of a magician, actually. Somebody who has a way of controlling the circumstances so that your attention is focused only on the thing that he wants to fool you about. And the rest of it, he's just extremely practiced and very cool.
Well, apparently he didn't parade around the house naked a whole lot.
He did not. Never. No. And his wives were actually quite grateful at what they regarded as his extremely courteous and thoughtful behavior. They said to me, almost everybody found a way to say this to me, you know, if somebody has certain kinds of preferences about privacy and you love them, well, you just permit them to, you know, be modest or lock doors behind them if they want to. But with Billy, they also had the idea that he had been injured in a car accident that crushed his ribs and pelvis so that it wasn't comfortable for him to be squeezed or touched. He always wore bindings around his chest, and he wore a jock strap under his shorts, so there were always straps there. And the women did his laundry and didn't notice anything unusual about this. But he always made love in the dark, and he never walked around the house nude.
How did the women feel about being deceived when they discovered the truth after his death?
You know, I was quite astounded at how little resentment there was in them. I think because Billy actually loved them, and they loved him. And their memories of him are of a man whom they loved deeply and felt, on reflection, you know, that he'd been generous and good to them, and that they'd never had any embarrassment about it until after his death, of course, when both of them felt as if they really had to try to explain themselves. Because I'm sorry to say that running through this entire story is a very profound homophobia. That is, nobody wants to be thought of as a lesbian. And this is one of the reasons that everybody wants to explain to me how they could have been taken in, that they were heterosexual women, what they thought were heterosexual relationships, and that Billy turned out to be female was just unbelievable to them. And I have a feeling that maybe Billy shared that attitude, too, that it wasn't a good thing to be a lesbian. I think that's why he decided that he would be a man.
Did Billy Tipton try to pass as not only a man, but a family man, a kind of traditional family man?
He did. In fact, his last wife, Kitty Oakes, speculated after she found out after his death about his sex. She said, you know, I think Billy must have chosen me because I was incapable of having sex. She was very phobic about sex because of early traumas. And she also had had a hysterectomy, so couldn't have children. But she'd always wanted to have just a normal family life. And when Billy asked her to marry him, she was really thrilled at the idea of just sort of settling down, becoming a suburban housewife, having been, by the way, a stripper for the past 15 years. So this was her ideal. She wanted to get out of the life, as she said. And Billy's approach to her was that of two people, both of who had been damaged sexually, but who might like to have a family. So together they adopted three children that were the unwelcome, illegitimate children of other show people. And Kitty thought they were legally adopted, three boys, and raised this family, taking them through the Boy Scouts, being very active in PTA, having truly a very conventional suburban family life.
Well, you managed to get, as part of your research, an audio recording that Billy Tipton made, a kind of Christmas greeting to his mother-in-law, Kitty's mother. And I thought we might hear some of that now. This was recorded in 1974. Would you like to say something about it before we hear it?
Yes, I was elated, Terry, to find that, or to be given this tape by the estate, because there was so little information that came directly from Billy. This voice is, I think, just immensely instructive. You can hear the Oklahoma in it. As a matter of fact, it sounds very much like the voice of Chet Baker in the voiceover from Let's Get Lost, that documentary that was made about Chet Baker. It's quite eerie how that similarity of the pitch and the sound of the voice and so on. The question is it a man or is it a woman, comes up right away, and I think, you know, challenge you to be able to tell the difference. But it also gives you a sense of Billy as a performer, the timing and the pace and the drawl and the humor. So it gave me just a little smack of what it might have been like to sit in a room with Billy and listen to him.
Well, let's hear Billy Tipton speaking in an audio postcard to his mother-in-law, Christmas 1974.
Merry Christmas, Grandma. This is coming to you from the living room of your former home in Spokane, Washington. It's a mighty gloomy night out tonight. We've had some snow, and it's kind of foggy out there, and it's probably around 32 degrees, which isn't too bad for this time of the year. We've been very lucky with the weather, and we had some snow and some ice and some stuff, but it's all fairly mild now. In fact, it's good pneumonia weather, if that's any consolation to anybody. Also, pretty busy at the office.
Naturally, Billy Tipton, recorded in 1974. My guest, Diane Middlebrook, has written a new biography of musician Billy Tipton, who was born a woman but passed as a man for most of her professional life. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Diane Middlebrook, she's written a biography of Billy Tipton, a musician who was a woman but passed as a man for most of her professional life. Why did Billy Tipton want to pass in the first place? I mean, there's two, like, obvious answers you could give. One is that, you know, she was a woman who wanted to be a man, or a lesbian who didn't want to be a lesbian and therefore wanted to pose as a man. Or the professional career answer might be it was really hard for women of that generation to find work as jazz musicians, easier for men. Therefore, you know, she became a he. So, what do you think figures into the equation?
Well, the first thing that figures in is the period of Billy's deciding to try to get a job playing music as a man. This is really a depression story, and that is in the historical sense, that Billy was a teenager, late teenager, and then 20 years old when she started trying to play music and make a living at it. And it was during the Great Depression when the jobs were very hard to get, but in addition there was this milieu of real fear about the economic catastrophe that people were in. I got this very much reflected through Billy's cousins, who were devoted to her and who provided some of the most important kinds of insights into Billy's the phase when Billy was deciding this was the way to do what she wanted to do, because they were there the first day that she ever cross-dressed, actually. They told me about binding her, tearing up this sheet and helping her tie it around her middle of her body and put a great big safety pin in it, and how she slicked back her hair and said she was going to go audition, see if she couldn't get a job playing in a band where they needed a saxophone player, and also were going to be crossing the state line, which she couldn't have done if she were female. And then she came back and had money in her hand. And they said to me, both of them found ways to say this, you can't understand unless you live through the Depression what it was like. Think of the alternatives. Just think of what might have happened to Dorothy. And it was what that was on their mind was obviously unspeakable, but what they meant, I'm sure, is that after all, you know, you just didn't know how from one day to the next where you were going to get any money. You might have ended up becoming a prostitute. It's definitely what they feared and what they projected onto Billy as the basic issue, this stark thing. So what Billy did, landing on her feet by cross-dressing and just playing music as a man, was to them just admirable and inventive. I think one of them used the word innovative. So clearly there was a payoff right away for cross-dressing.
Billy Tipton started cross-dressing just professionally to get work.
Yes.
But wasn't really pretending outside of that to be a man.
No, but what she did apparently when she would go to auditions was practice the don't ask, don't tell sort of tactic, because she'd go and sit down with her saxophone apparently and join a band, and then guys would figure out or observe that she was female, and they just sort of took it in stride according to them. And I do ask them, maybe even it becomes a little too repetitious in the book because I can't get enough of the answer. Did you know that Billy was female? And they say, yeah, so what? You know, I say, now, come on. Really, it can't be so what. It must have mattered. And they say, no, it's just, she's just a, you know, she was a good piano player. She was a good musician. And that's just the way it was. Nobody made much of a fuss about it. Now, that was in the early days in Oklahoma City. That was between, say, 34 and 1939, when Billy was playing in country swing bands that were modeled on the band Bob Wills and playing dance music in honky-tonks. So it wasn't really, we shouldn't say a very high-profile economic life But in about 1940, I think Dorothy had big ambitions to be a jazz musician, and I think that she decided that the only way that Billy was going to ever get any real work in a swing band, which is what I think she wanted, was to pass as a man full-time, not just be this strange creature who, you know, wore men's clothes and blew a saxophone. So she went to Joplin, Missouri, and began being a man full-time.
When you did the equation in your mind, finally, how much do you think of Billy's transformation to female, from female to male, had to do with his career as a jazz musician, and how much did it have to do with just gender identity?
Well, I think that anybody who does something like this for this long has more than one reason for doing it, and probably has lots of reasons for doing it. But my problem in answering that question is that almost everything that I might have to say about it would come from the present, when we have a very rich array of ways of talking about gender and are very interested in gender ambiguity. But in Billy's day, that really wasn't true. And I found that when I was trying to elicit from people who knew Billy an account of what Billy's personality was like, and just trying to get close to what it was like to be near him, that I had to just use what language they had for these things. Let me tell you that the story that was the most consciousness-raising for me in this, I was pretty sure that I had found the lesbian history in Billy's life in Oklahoma City. And I was asking the musicians, I said, you know, here Billy was living with this person that was listed in the city directory as non-Earl Tipton, so she was passing as his wife. I said, did you think that Billy was and non-Earl were lesbians? And the guys would say to me, without exception, they'd say, no, we didn't think that. Now, one day, after I'd been hearing this for many years, I was speaking to a woman who'd been involved in this business, too, and I said, Sarah, I can understand this because I think that Billy and non-Earl were romantically involved with each other, but whenever I ask the musicians, did you think they were lesbians, they say no. She said, well, honey, we didn't have that word. Now, we didn't call anybody a lesbian. You're from San Francisco. You don't understand this. See, if you had asked them, did you think Billy and non-Earl were romantically involved, they would have said, well, hell, everybody knew that. So I went back to one of these musicians. I said, Wayne, did you think that Billy and non-Earl were romantically involved? And he said, yep. So I was learning that they were answering the questions I had asked them, and they didn't think that Billy was a lesbian because they didn't have that word, and they didn't think of people as having kind of gender identity of that kind. They were just people getting by in show business, nice people, good musicians, and it was nobody's damn business. That was pretty much the story.
Gender is such a kind of big subject now, and I'm wondering what people who focus on gender issues have had to say about Billy, some of the things that have been projected onto Billy Tipton.
I think that there's a sort of division between the transgenderists who've adopted Billy as a poster boy. In fact, Billy appears on the cover of a how-to book on cross-dressing that was published in San Francisco shortly after his death. As the example of the person like themselves, the transgenderist, who believes that he's been born into the wrong body. He is a man in a female body and wants that corrected. The other kind of camp that claims Billy are lesbians who see Billy as a kind of a butch who was not permitted to be socially acceptable, who didn't have a context in which she could live out a female masculinity, so to speak, and so therefore had to pass. But my view of Billy is as an actor who was fulfilled within the roles that the music business and her own talent permitted her to play.
Has writing of the biography of Billy Tipton challenged any of your views about gender?
I think it's challenged just about everything. I found that the only way that I could really get close to Billy's subjectivity, which is so elusive, since she really was very good at protecting herself from intimates, was to try to identify with the women that were close to Billy and think about what it is that, for me, is masculine about a man. And I don't think theories help very much, but what does help is just sort of consulting your own experience. That is, how what a huge range there is in sexual intimacies, for one thing. Just a huge range in men's bodies, men's ways of being close to you, and also the kinds of private, usually unspoken negotiations you make yourself around privacy. And that those things themselves are the, I think, the inner, the kind of inner accountability you can have toward somebody like this.
Well, Diane Middlebrook, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Diane Middlebrook's new biography of Billy Tipton is Suits Me.